Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM Processor Value Unit and Subcapacity Licensing Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Carlos Belak. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks very much, Jessica. Welcome, everyone, to the call. Before we get started, let me just make sure that you all know where to find the charts for this presentation. If you look at your calendar invitation and open that up, the Lotus Notes calendar invitation, and scroll down to the white space in the calendar invitation to the second link where it says presentation can be found prior to the call at this link, and you click on that link from the calendar invitation, it will take you to the Excel page, Software Sellers Workplace, and this page has information about subcapacity licensing. If you scroll down on that page past full capacity licensing and subcapacity licensing, there is a section that says Seller Training Resources, and you'll find a table which has in that first box, it'll say April 15th, North America call-in information, and there's a link on the right side there to the charts. So if you click on that link, you should get the charts open. I'll give you a minute to do that. And for those of you who followed along here, go ahead and do that. And for those of you let me just say it again. So the charts for this presentation you can get to from your calendar invitation. It's the second link if you open up your calendar invitation. Under the words, presentation can be found prior to the call at this link. If you go to that link, which is the subcapacity internal education page, and you scroll down about a page and a half or so, you'll find a table. And in that table, there'll be a date, says April 15th, and you click on the link in that table, you should get these charts. Anybody having trouble getting the charts, if you would ping Roger Kerr, K-E-R-R, on the same time, he'll ping you the link. And with that, let's get started. So again, as Jessica mentioned, the charts, when you open them up, will say, recent PVU and subcapacity parenthetical virtualization announcements overview, April 2009. And if we go to the agenda, let me just tell you the main points of the discussion. We made two announcements in April, one for PVU licensing in response to new Intel technology, the other for subcapacity licensing, which, of course, subcapacity licensing dovetails with PVU licensing. So we made both of these announcements in the month of April. And in addition, we've sent a letter to all Passport Advantage customers notifying them of the changes that we announced with our subcapacity announcement to the subcapacity offering. And so in this call, we'll talk through both of the announcements, PVUs and subcap, as well as what's being communicated to your customers in this notification letter that we're also sending this month. And then at the end, we have some competitive examples that we'll walk through. I'll walk through comparing IBM to Oracle as far as capacity-based licensing, including what Oracle has versus IBM has in the way of subcapacity licensing. So that's the presentation. Let's go to page three and start with some background in terms of what's happening in the server marketplace technology, what's changing as far as technology is concerned. And there's really three main points on this page that you need to be aware of. As you listen to this presentation, keep in mind these three points. The first point is that chip vendors like Intel are adding more cores to their chips. This multi-core phenomenon that really started 2 years ago or so. We're now seeing entering the next phase. We're moving from dual-core chips to quad-core chips. And we're going to continue to see that trend over the next couple of years, more cores being added to a single chip. That's the first point. The second point is that the performance capacity of each of those cores is increasing. Cases significantly, certainly in the case of this new Intel technology that we're going to talk about, increasing significantly the performance capacity per core. And then the third point is that the adoption of virtualization technology is increasing, which is very good as far as our strategy, which is to make virtualization technology and subcapacity licensing more accessible to our customers. So what's happening is more vendors are entering the marketplace or have entered the marketplace, particularly in the Intel or AMD, the x86 hardware space with virtualization technology. And so that's driving down the cost of virtualization quite significantly. Microsoft, so maybe last year we were focused on VMware. This year we're focused on Microsoft Hyper-V. We're focused on Red Hat Linux, Citrix Xen, other competitors driving the price of virtualization down quite significantly, and that's adding to the trend of increasing use of virtualization, which plays into the strategy that we have that we'll talk about more, which is to sell customers the capacity that they need. So three points to keep in mind: more cores per chip, increasing performance per core, and an increasing use of virtualization technology. That's really the most important part of, capacity-based licensing in terms of marketplace trends. So we move on to page four, why license to the core. The point to understand here is that we have consistently and for many years licensed to the processor core. Now, if you go back prior to multi-core with Intel technology, we used the word processor, and there was no confusion. The word processor meant a core, certainly to us, and for those vendors that only had one core per chip, there was no discussion. But we in IBM with power technology have been licensing to the core on dual-core power chips since 2001. So there's no change. Right? We have consistently in IBM software licensed to the processor core, not the processor chip. Now, we do that because that gives customers the ability to license for the capacity that they need, right? Per core licensing is more granular than per chip licensing or per server licensing. So rather than charge a customer for the chip, which may have four cores on it, we charge them for each core that they need, right? And the example on this page, to draw an analogy, is would you rather be forced to buy all the tickets for a certain sporting event that may have multiple games in the event, or would you want to be able to buy the number of tickets, one ticket if you just want to see one game, or two tickets if you want to see two tickets, right? And we think that if you allow customers to buy granularity, it makes all the customers happy, right? They can buy all the tickets, by buying each of the tickets that are available, or they can buy just one ticket, right? So we license to the core because that provides granularity and flexibility for customers. And I also will mention that licensing to the core in the physical world aligns very neatly with how virtualization technologies are constructed, whereby, virtualization technologies are licensing to virtual cores. Right? We'll talk more about that as we go here. But, you know, the physical core and the virtual core are aligned as far as our strategy is concerned when we're licensing to the core. So we've got a lot of good reasons to license to the core, and we're going to stay on licensing to the core, let there be no question. So if we go to page 5, a little bit more on what I started to talk about, which was this word processor. And really the key point on this page is, while 2 or 3 years ago we could use the word processor and confidently, you know, assume that everybody understood that that was a core, and that we required, you know, one license per core on a chip that had two cores, now the word processor has morphed into a very ambiguous meaning. And so when I hear processor, I don't know what it means anymore, because Intel thinks today that a processor means a chip. IBM thinks a processor is a core. You know, we have to, you know, when we talk about processor, we have to ask the question, how many processor cores, or simply cores, are we licensing to, right? So is it a processor chip or is it a processor core? The key question is, how many cores are we licensing to? Let's not forget to ask that, because when you hear the word processor, you know, nobody knows what that means anymore. So you've got to get a little more granular. Let's use the word processor core so that we know what we're talking about when we're talking about processors.
Excuse me just one moment. Before Carlos goes on, I understand that there's someone probably in the speaker part of the conference who has the same time ding up very loud. If you could mute your system, we'd appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Roger. Okay, so let's move to, with that background on the marketplace and licensing to the core, let's move to page 6 and talk about the new Intel technology. So the new Intel announced on March 30th that for servers, they would have this new technology called Nehalem available for small servers, servers with either one or two chips, and by the way, the word chip sometimes is used synonymously with the word socket, so you'll hear the terms pretty much used interchangeably. So if you hear that, you know, a one-socket server or a one-chip server means pretty much the same thing. So Intel announced March 30th that this new technology was available for one- and two-socket servers, and that they haven't announced this, but we expect, we understand that sometime in 2010, this Nehalem technology will be available for larger servers, servers with four sockets available. And this new processor chip has the same brand name that old server chips, Intel server chips, had. It's called Xeon, X-E-O-N. So this Nehalem technology is used on servers under the brand name, as was previous generation Intel processor technology using the word Xeon. And this new technology is available in 2009 with dual core and quad core flavors. So in that case, two cores per chip or socket, or four cores per chip or socket. And as I mentioned, the number of flavors available in terms of multi-core will increase in 2010 and 2011 per the roadmap. We'll start to see hexa-core and octa-core processor chips coming into the marketplace in 2010-2011. Now, we announced on April 1st that the PVU requirement per core for this new Nehalem technology is 70 PVUs. And we'll, on the next page, talk about why we did that. So let's go to page 7. There's three sets of bar charts on this page that really tell the story on why we went to 70 PVUs for this new processor technology. On the left side is the performance story. And what you have in the small bar on the left side, you can see that Xeon technology from Intel for servers that would have been available approximately 3 years ago during the first half of 2006 had a certain performance capacity on average per core. As compared to the new Nehalem technology, the performance capacity per core is up by almost 200%. So over a three-year period, you have a 3X performance capacity available in the new cores versus the old cores. And so when you look at the PVUs that we're requiring, the performance is going up by almost 200%. The PVUs are higher for the new technology by 40% versus the old technology. And those things taken together, if you look to the bar chart on the far right, really translate to a price per unit of throughput reduction, a price reduction of 50%, or prices are being cut in half, in effect, when you look at the price per unit of throughput. So another way to say that is a customer can run twice as much workload for the same price, or can cut their price in half for a constant workload. So a pretty powerful price performance improvement, which is the commitment that we made when we announced PVUs back in 2006. So we're honoring that commitment. Very powerful price performance improvement. We shouldn't be shy when it comes to customer discussions where customers are adopting this new Nehalem technology. Personally, you know, I think we should be, you know, pulling back on discounts because, you know, rather than, you know, certainly doing the opposite, because the price performance is quite significant here over a three-year replacement period. Now, that said, if we go to page 8, one of the challenges that you're going to have in the field, and we have, is identifying what is the Nehalem technology versus the previous generation technology. I said earlier that the brand name is the same. So it's going to be an Intel Xeon processor chip. And, you know, there's going to be, I think, one of two situations. One situation is the customer knows that they bought a server with Nehalem technology, and so the answer is, how many cores do you have? And it's 70 PVUs per core. Same story as for the last, you know, 2 to 3 years with PVU licensing. When the customer doesn't know, you know, what they're going to be deploying the software on, then we need to ask some more questions around processor model numbers. So we're looking to Intel's processor model number scheme to understand whether the processor technology is Nehalem or previous generation technology. Now, just a little bit on Intel's processor model numbering scheme, and then I'll talk about some tools that we have available. So the thing to understand is that Intel has three classes of processor chips that are meant for three classes of server sizes. They got small, medium, large. And in the small class, it's defined by servers with a capacity of one socket maximum. In the medium class, you got servers with two sockets. And by the way, the two-socket servers sort of dominate the volumes with 70% of Intel volumes on two-socket, you know, medium-sized servers. And then you have the third class, which is the large class, or four-socket or bigger servers from Intel. And Intel has a different processor model number series for each class. They have the 3000 series for the small. They have the 5000 series for the medium and the 7000 series for the large. And specifically within each of the series, Intel has designated 500 or above to be Nehalem processor technologies and under 500 to be previous generation Xeon technology. As an example, at the top of page 8, you can see that we've identified 70 PVUs Nehalem technology when you're looking in the small servers ranging between processor model numbers between 3500 and 3599, that's Nehalem. 5500 to 5599 is Nehalem. And when Nehalem comes out for four-socket servers, the large servers, the range will be 7500 to 7599. Whereas the previous generation Intel Xeon processor chips all have, you can see the ranges down below, processor model numbers at $34.99 and under, $54.99 and under, and $74.99 and under. In the table at the bottom of page 8, which is an excerpt of the processor value unit table that we maintain on our PVU webpage that you can access from the links at the back of this presentation, you'll see the processor model number ranges that correspond to Nehalem at 70 PVUs versus previous generation at 50 PVUs. I should point out that AMD processor technologies are all at 50 PVUs per core today. And with that, let me go to page 9, sort of recapping on this discussion around PVUs and what we announced. You know, the main point here to recap is that we price based on processor capacity available. The processor capacity available on these new Nehalem technologies is significantly higher than previous generation technologies, both because of the increasing number of cores. Predominantly, we're on quad core now, whereas previously we were on dual core. So the number of cores per server is basically doubling, and because the performance per core is significantly increasing per the bar charts. And as a result, our strategy is to, you know, talk with customers about how we price, how we license, which is based on capacity available. And if they're planning capacity, planning properly in the sense that they don't need as many servers or as many processor cores to run a constant workload as they did on previous technology, then I think, you know, we can make this strategy work, coupled with the strategy that virtualization is increasing. And so if they want to maintain the same number of servers that they had previously as they do server replacements with this new technology, they need to be looking at virtualization. And we'll talk next about the virtualization technologies that we offer to make accessible to our customers. So the main point here is the software value is based on the processor capacity available, and we ought to sell customers on that point. So let's go to page 10, talk about the subcapacity announcement. Two points on this page that you should understand. The first point is that what we announced was that nearly all of our PVU-based products are now eligible for subcapacity licensing, whereas previously we had most of our major products, major revenue-driving products available for or eligible for subcapacity licensing. We had many products that were not eligible. Customers were asking why not, and so we have a, you know, I think, significant improvement here. Now we can, you know, look customers in the eye and say nearly all, except for, you know, I think we have one or two products that are not eligible for technical reasons, nearly all of our products are now eligible for subcapacity licensing, all PVU-based products. So that's a big plus. Also, while we made this move, we also eliminated the two-part number structure. We are eliminating the requirement for the use of subcapacity part numbers. Customers can now use full-capacity part numbers, their existing full-capacity part numbers, for full-capacity licensing or subcapacity licensing, so long as in a subcapacity manner, so long as they agree to the subcapacity terms. Now, on this point, one of the questions is going to be, what about, you know, my existing full capacity part numbers? And on that point, let me just say that at the for S&S entitlements, we are going to migrate at the customer's next anniversary renewal period, customers' subcapacity entitlements to full capacity entitlements. And for license entitlements, you know, we allow customers to use subcapacity license entitlements on a one-for-one basis in full capacity mode or subcapacity mode. So the key is that, you know, customers no longer have to worry about two part numbers. Customers don't have to worry about converting from their existing full capacity part numbers to subcapacity part numbers. Really what they need to worry about is full capacity or standard PVU part numbers work for both full capacity and subcapacity mode so long as they agree to the terms of the subcapacity offering. So we added a lot more PVU products as eligible. We eliminated the use of subcapacity part numbers. And then on page 11, the other important point that we announced was an expansion of the eligible virtualization technologies, particularly in the x86 space, in order to make, as I said earlier, virtualization or subcapacity licensing more accessible to our customers, particularly those customers that are using Intel or AMD technologies. So Red Hat Linux, Citrix Xen, Microsoft Hyper-V, all eligible now for subcapacity licensing. We also made eligible the use of either BIOS commands or operating system commands that limit the number of cores that are available to the middleware running on the server. That's also eligible for subcapacity licensing. We want to make subcapacity licensing as easy as possible for our customers. So now if you go to page 12, when you think about the subcapacity licensing requirements at the top of the page, we continue to require that customers accept subcapacity terms by signing the subcapacity attachment. We require that customers use eligible subcapacity products, but substantially all products are now eligible, so that's easy. We require that customers use eligible virtualization technologies. We have most of the, or really all of the major, essentially all of the major virtualization technologies for x86 eligible. That's good news. And we continue to require the use of the IBM license metric tool and the maintenance of audit reports that are generated from that tool. And the reason for that is with virtualization technologies, processor capacity is dynamically moving within servers and in certain cases amongst servers, and it's very difficult to track capacity available without the tool. So we have worked very hard to simplify the tool. I want to point out that the tool is getting good reviews. We introduced the tool in July of 2008, and I want to differentiate this new tool, which is significantly simplified and easier to use, versus the tool that IBM started with perhaps, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, which, you know, was more difficult, had a lot of business requirements. We started out, made it a little too complicated, maybe a lot too complicated. Some customers still remember that old tool, and they're reluctant to use the new tool. The new tool is working well. We're working on creating some business references that you can use with customers to satisfy any hesitancy to use this tool. The tool is really critical for customers to be able to measure the processor capacity available and be help them be compliance ready. On the bottom of page 12, there's a complete list of eligible virtualization technologies, including those that run on Unix RISC, those that run on x86. This is a high level. The subcapacity web page, where we have our access to much of all the information around subcapacity licensing, has a more granular list that you can access from the last page in this presentation, the links to that information. That more granular list, you know, gives you specific versions of these virtualization technologies. Customers can understand which ones are eligible as well as which ones are supported by ILMT. There tends to be a lag of about a year between eligibility of technology. So, for example, Microsoft Hyper-V is now eligible. The ILMT tool will support Hyper-V in about a year from now. So eligibility and support from the tool are two different things. And there's about a year lag between the two. Now, on page 13 highlights, so that's the discussion around subcapacity licensing and what we announced on April 7th. If you move to page 13, we began sending letters to customers explaining to them what we announced in the way of subcapacity licensing on April 7th. And, you know, the process will continue for all PA customers in the world for the next 2 weeks or so until all the letters go out. So you know, customers will be getting letters at different points in time during April. And the letters will say that we made a subcapacity announcement. As part of that announcement, the key things are we expanded the list of eligible products, expanded the list of eligible virtualization technologies, and eliminated the requirement to use subcapacity part numbers, so we simplified tracking and reporting. That's one part of the letter. Second part of the letter is notifying customers that we changed the terms of the subcapacity attachment, and for those customers that agreed to the subcapacity attachment terms beginning in September of 2008, there's no effect. They've already agreed to the new attachment. For those customers who signed the subcapacity attachment prior to September of 2008, the terms of the new attachment become effective for them 90 days after their notification, or August 1st, 2009. And really, the key points in terms of what has changed, we're explaining to customers that the technology has changed, and so the terms have changed as well to allow licensing rules for new technologies. That's really the main part, the main reason for the change. Then the third part of the communication letter is simply pointing customers to the official websites that we maintain for both PVU and subcapacity licensing, including, you know, the PVU table, which has the latest and greatest processor technologies and the PVU requirements for those technologies, including the Intel and the Halem announcement. So with that, takes care of the discussion around the PVU announcement for Nehalem, the subcapacity licensing announcement changes, the notification letter to customers, all happening in April. And then on page 14, just a quick couple charts comparing Oracle to IBM for capacity-based licensing. On page 14, we want to point out that Oracle recently changed their licensing structure to make their licensing structure, frankly, very similar to the PVU licensing structure without using PVUs. They use fractional processor cores, and we use different PVU ratings per core, essentially to achieve the same thing, which is to differentiate the number of licenses that's required for slow cores versus fast cores. And with the expansion of their processor core factor table, Oracle announced that the licensing requirement for IBM Power 6 and Z10 servers per processor, the processor requirement for those hardwares, has increased from what was 0.75 per core under Oracle fractional processor factor licensing to one license per core. Now, one of the things I'll be quick to point out here is that unlike what we do with PVUs, which is to announce the PVU requirement concurrent with the announcement of the new processor technology, Oracle doesn't seem to have any qualms about retroactively announcing licensing requirements for processor technologies like Power 6 that have been in the marketplace since the middle of 2007. So they're kind of 2 years late in terms of their requirement, and that's got to be painful to some of our customers. But essentially, they're on the same licensing structure that we're on, recognizing the significant differentiation in terms of processor capacity amongst different processor technologies in the marketplace. Now, the other thing I'll point out, if you look to the third row in this table, Oracle also has moved to processor model numbers to identify the type of processor technology for Intel and AMD technologies. Well, Intel to start, I should say. So they're using processor model numbers, as are we, in order to identify Nehalem technology versus predecessor technology. And then the other thing I want to point out that's very important is that Oracle has a very, very restrictive approach to virtualization or subcapacity licensing. So IBM, you know, has a robust offering. We support all sorts of virtualization technologies, whether they're hard, you know, logical or virtual partitions, hard or soft partitions. Oracle supports or allows a limited number of virtualization technologies, really hard partitioning only. So we have, a significant advantage when it comes to capacity licensing in terms of subcapacity licensing. And let me make that point on the next two pages. So first, let me make a simple point on page 15, showing for the application server products in the enterprise space what our price points are versus Oracle price points for a Power 6 server that has four processor cores. So Oracle previously required 0.75 per core. Now they require one license per core. And IBM requires 120 PVUs per core, right? So a server that has four cores, if you take into account the licensing requirements and the list price per license, Oracle's is per processor core, ours is PVUs per core, while, you know, we're at $83,520 suggested retail price for our WASND product, Oracle's roughly equivalent enterprise application server product, the WebLogic enterprise application server product, is now $122,000 list price, whereas previously it was $91,500. So, and you can do this for DB2 enterprise as well. And I think you'll see the same list price advantage that we have versus Oracle's. But the licensing structure is very similar. We just have more competitive list prices. Now, Kate, that's on list prices and licensing without virtualization. If you go to page 16, let me just drive home the point. Because Oracle doesn't allow soft partitioning, for example, they don't allow VMware on x86, while IBM does. And so if you're on a server that, if you're running a database or an application server product from Oracle or IBM on a server that has eight processor cores, and you have the middleware constrained or restricted to a partition or a virtual machine, same thing, that has two processor cores or virtual cores, IBM will require that you license to each of the two virtual cores. And if it's Nehalem technology, that means that it'll be 70 PVUs per core for each virtual core, 140 PVUs. Oracle will require that you license to all eight cores on the server, so we'll have a significant advantage in this case. With that, let me summarize on page 17 the key points of this discussion, which are that, you know, the PVU rating for Nehalem, 70 PVUs per core, provides customers with significant price performance improvements over previous generation processor technologies. And we have dovetailed our subcapacity offering with our PVU licensing structure, making subcapacity more accessible to more customers by expanding the number of PVU-based products that are eligible, expanding the number of virtualization technologies that are eligible, and reducing the complexity of the offering by eliminating the subcapacity part numbers in terms of tracking, different part numbers across full cap versus subcap environments. But we still have subcapacity requirements. Subcapacity attachment lists what those requirements are. And, you know, one of the key ones that, you know, you need to discuss with your customers is the use of ILMT and why we require ILMT when we're in a subcapacity licensing environment. So with that, Jessica, if you could open up for Q&A. I'll just mention that there are resources, seller resources and customer resources, so internal and external web pages where we have more information about PVU, subcapacity licensing, and the IBM license metric tool in the next two pages. So, Jessica, if you can open up for Q&A, appreciate it.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Again, that is star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And we'll take our first question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Joe Feaster. I have a quick question about the notes that are going out to the customer. Is there going to be a way for us to confirm, without going directly to the customer, whether or not they have signed the subcapacity licensing agreement?
The indication for that would be on the Passport Advantage site. There's a checkbox that indicates whether or not they have accepted the terms of the subcapacity attachment. Now, it won't tell you whether it's the new attachment or the old attachment, Joe. The way to understand that is to understand when they signed the PA enrollment, right? So if they signed the attachment after September 2008, then they will have signed the new attachment. If they signed it prior to September 2008, it would have been the old attachment. Now, if you have the subcapacity attachment or the customer has it in hand, right, you can certainly compare it to the current attachment, which you'll be able to find from the subcapacity webpage link. If you go to the subcapacity link on the right-hand side nav bar under Essentials, you'll be able to navigate to the subcapacity attachments. There's a link directly to it.
And this is Roger Kerr. I just want to add the other thing that I got a question over same time. Off that same page Carlos was just talking about, you can also get a link to see the letters we're sending to your customers in all of the languages that the letters get sent out. So that should help as well.
Great. Thanks.
And this is Steve Salivari. I just want to say that that application is FastPass, that where you can look up the subcapacity statuses as to whether they have accepted those terms. And for those, if you're not sure when they accepted it, you can be pretty confident that if they ordered subcapacity part numbers prior to the summer of last year, 2008, then they are on the old terms.
Wait, so one more time. So I could check in FastPass, but only by looking at what they've ordered. Or I can go right to the PPA site and look it up there.
No. This is John Maurer. If you go to FastPass, you can see if the customer has accepted the subcap terms. If it's marked as yes, then they have. You don't need to go anywhere else.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
No problem.
And we'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Matt Schneider from WebSphere. Nice presentation. Slide 16 really exemplifies a situation I ran into twice in the fourth quarter last year where Oracle, because they didn't recognize VMware, they were trying to charge the customer quite a bit on WebLogic licensing. And unfortunately for us, Oracle went ahead and did one-offs with both customers, so temporarily the issue just went away. But long-term, we may still have an opportunity. But a question just came to mind. And that is, since Oracle obviously acknowledges their own VM technology, I was just thinking in terms of total cost of ownership. Do they charge for that technology? Because I was trying to think about if you combine our software plus the VMware cost, how does that compare with Oracle software plus their own VM cost?
I'm searching around if anybody knows. I'm not sure, Matt, anybody on the phone knows the answer to that.
I don't off the top of my head. This is Roger Kerr. If you shoot me a note, we will get you an answer and send it back via note.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Roger.
And we'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hello, this is Carl Meyer. I've got a question about the expansion of the eligible virtualization technologies. Can a customer take advantage of those immediately from a subcap standpoint, even though the ILMT is not going to be available till second half of 2010?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, Carl. So yes is the short answer. So any technology that's eligible, customers can take advantage of immediately. However, having said that, they need to agree that when ILMT is supporting that technology, they're going to use ILMT. And in the interim, they have to manually track the processor capacity available to the middleware on that virtualization environment. And we have a manual, we call it a manual calculation method that you need to talk with your customer about that has requirements for that manual tracking. You know, from our subcapacity web page to the manual calculation method.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And we'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead. Julia, your line is open.
Hi, Julia Johnston. I have a question about the if a customer, if the checkbox is marked that they have signed the agreement. And maybe they signed it based on, you know, one product, and now they have other products that they'd also like to, you know, virtualize in this way. Are they eligible in any of the software products that are available, which is most of them? Are they now eligible to do virtualization on all of them with one agreement signed, or does the agreement have to be signed for each product that they want to use in this manner?
No, it's, well, John, I mean, keep me honest here, but it's one agreement, you know, per site.
Okay.
It's one agreement per Passport Advantage contract.
Right.
Right, okay.
Right.
So all the products on the PPA, are they automatically eligible once they sign this new terms and condition or based on the old terms and conditions?
They're eligible, you know, if they've signed the subcapacity terms, and I stand corrected, not for each site, but based on the PA contract, right, so the lead site. The letter says that the terms of the new attachment will go in effect automatically beginning August 1st.
Oh, okay. So as long as they have something signed, then the new terms go into effect in August without them having to re-sign something?
Where is your customer base? Is it in the U.S.?
Yes, U.S.
In the U.S., we don't actually do signatures on most of our documents. So all that really matters is the subcapacity attachment as appended to their Passport Advantage agreement. If it is, then the terms apply to any acquisition that they do under the agreement.
Oh, okay. And so you were mentioning the manual process just a minute ago with the other person's question. So for now, they just continue doing the manual tracking themselves to make sure they're within compliance, and there's not a tool they need to run yet.
Right, so I think it's two different questions, Julia. Right.
Oh.
One question is if they have signed or agreed to the terms of the subcapacity attachment, then they are, you know, for one product, that's good for any Passport Advantage PVU-based product, right? They don't have to re-sign, okay? And the new attachment terms, in the case where they signed the old attachment, become automatically live beginning August 1st.
Okay.
So that's you know, one part of the question. The second part of the question has to do with eligible virtualization technologies. And the point there is we want to make as many technologies eligible as possible. So we don't want to wait for the ILMT tool to support those technologies. So what we've done is we've said, you know, for example, Microsoft Hyper-V is an eligible virtualization technology, but the tool doesn't yet support it. The guys are now beginning to code that into the tool.
Okay.
So we will announce, you know, sometime next year, middle of next year, that the tool now supports Microsoft Hyper-V. So from a customer perspective, the way to bridge them between now and the middle of next year is to tell them you can use Microsoft Hyper-V, but you need to track the processor capacity manually using this manual calculation method that we explain the details of on our webpage.
Oh, okay. So the tool is available for some of the technologies, just not all of them yet.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. Thanks.
And we'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Susan Porter. My questions have been addressed by other folks. I just thought maybe I would ask, though, about these audit reports. From what I understand, we require the customers to run them and maintain them for a period of time, which are
yes.
subject to review by IBM upon request.
That's correct. And you know, just to be clear, we require that they maintain these audit reports, whether they're being generated from the ILMT tool mm-hmm. or from the manual calculation method, for at least 2 years, and that they run them at least quarterly, no less frequently than quarterly.
And what if they, I see in the agreement, you know, that if they're found to have excessive use of their authorized licensing, that, you know, per our compliance will require them to pay for those. But what if they miss running a report or something like that? There's no, like with ILMT, does it automatically run the report for them so they don't have to remember to do it versus a manual, you know, run of something? I'm just worried about customers sort of becoming out of compliance by not having run the report on that regular basis. And does the tool help with that as well?
So ILMT, you know, does remind them, but the requirement is that the customer has to proactively review, right, and evidence the review by signing the report, you know, each quarter.
Okay.
Minimum each quarter.
And is there a penalty if they've, like, not run it for a quarter or something like that? Like, say we decide we send them a letter we want to see proof.
No, it's really, you know, it's the same honor code that we've always had, right? However, you know, in the event of an audit, you know, the auditors are going to request, or you know, to see these reports. And if the reports are not available, then the auditors are going to, you know, respond differently than if the reports are available, right? Because the thing about, you know, virtualization licensing is that, you know, the processor capacity is changing dynamically. And so what the reports do is, you know, maintain evidence of what capacity was available, you know, during the time prior to the auditors, you know, showing up.
Right.
So, you know, there's no immediate penalty, but, you know, in the event of an audit, they need to make the reports available upon request.
Okay, thank you.
We'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hello, this is David Brinkley. I have maybe some really fundamental questions. Number one, is the price, the PPU table on slide 8, is that the same table for every product? And then the other question would be, is the relationship between the cost and the PPU, does that grow linearly as you scale up a PPUs?
Yeah, so on the first question, that table, which is on page 8, is an excerpt, right, of a larger
right.
table that accommodates, you know, all the process technologies we run on per the, you know, first page of the PVU website. And, yes, it's, you know, for all Passport Advantage products that are priced based on PVUs.
Okay.
So, you know, no matter what the product is, each product has a price per PVU,
right.
and the number of PVUs, you know, is the same for all products. The dependency is what hardware the products are running on,
right.
right, that determines how many PVUs you require. Now, on your second question, it is linear, right? So if you're running on a server with one core available to the middleware and it's Nehalem, it's 70 PVUs, the requirement, you know, for any middleware running on that core. And if it's two cores, it's 140 PVUs.
Right.
Yep.
All right. And then the last question would be, I understand what subcapacity is because I come from a mainframe background, but I fail to distinguish the subtlety between PVU pricing and subcapacity pricing, because it's really the same thing. You're pricing at the capacity of the use, the chip. So is there any distinction, or are the two synonymous?
I think you got it right. In the difference is right. In both cases, you know, it's capacity based pricing, right?
Right.
So
right.
Licensing, you know, to the number of cores available to the middleware. You know, the distinction is with full capacity, right? You have to license for all the cores on the server, regardless of whether you're using virtualization technology to limit the cores available to the middleware, the IBM middleware, right? With subcapacity licensing, what we're saying is, you know, you have to agree to the terms that are defined in the attachment, and you have to use the ILMT tool, the IBM license metric tool, so that, you know, you to better help you understand how many cores, you know, in the subset of the server that you know, using virtualization are available to the middleware. So full capacity, you license to all the cores. Subcapacity, you agree to the terms, you use ILMT, and you license to a subset of the cores.
Understood. Thanks.
Yep.
And we'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Pat Phillips, and I'm wondering if our WebSphere Virtual Enterprise product is going to be listed as a supported virtual technology.
Is it a PVU-based product?
Yes, it is sold from a core standpoint as well as somewhat of a subcap standpoint. So it is the only true virtual technology we have in software group that's licensed through WebSphere. So just wondering why it's not here.
Okay, so you're asking if that's an eligible virtualization technology, and the answer is no at this time. Now, maybe we need to take it offline, Pat. I think that we have looked at this to some extent, and it doesn't, you know, limit the capacity available in, you know, like other virtualization technologies does, in terms of, you know, setting up partitions or virtual machines. But perhaps we should take this one offline. I think that's a very specific question around a specific product.
Yeah, if not, we definitely need a good answer because it will stick out as a sore thumb, as that's one of our initiatives in regarding to virtualization from the WebSphere brand.
Right. Okay, so let's look at it, take it offline.
Yep.
And, you know, just so everyone else understands, that's a specific product within WebSphere that, you know, Pat's saying has maybe should be considered as another virtualization technology on our eligible list of technologies.
Okay, thanks.
We'll go to our next question. Jean, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Jeannie Steinberg. Sorry, I had to come off mute there for a moment. My question is, I have several customers who have trouble with the licensing tool once they've converted, and I'm wondering where to send them for assistance.
Hey, this is Steve Salaveria. The ILMT is like any other product, like DB2 or WAS. Once you order and establish the license entitlement, that also establishes the entitlement that allows you to call in for support. So it's supported from a technical support perspective, level 1 and 2, just like any other product, even though it is no charge.
Great. Thank you.
We'll go to our next question.
Hello. This is Bill Boone. Thanks for your presentation today. On slide 12, under eligible virtualization technologies, is SUSE Linux going to be added?
Well, that's not announced yet. We are working with them. So we're working with them, not yet announced.
Okay. Just an FYI, they're sort of, Nortel and them are sort of a better partner for a software group to go forward with when we're talking Microsoft takeouts and things rather than Red Hat?
No, we understand. Let me just say that we're working closely with both vendors. And, you know, off the record, we certainly hope to add them. On the record, it's not announced, not eligible yet.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Bill.
We'll go to our next question.
Well, before we get to the next question, someone just reminded me of something. Bill, let me just point out that while it's not officially eligible, Novell SUSE Linux, we can special bid it, right? So if you have a particular situation, you can send that situation into our subcap ID, and we can help you with a special bid for SUSE Linux virtualization technology.
Hello, this is Alan Chereau. Regarding the elimination of the two-part number structure, full cap and subcap, what does that do to my customers running currently subcap part numbers? And secondly, it was mentioned that customers' SMS entitlements will be converted at the next SMS renewal after July 1st. What exactly will be converted?
Thanks, Alan. So there's really very little impact, right, because the price per PVU is the same for subcapacity part numbers versus full capacity part numbers. So let me take your, you know, with respect to the SNS entitlements, the plan is that at the next renewal date for anniversary dates on or after July 1st, the renewal quotes will reflect full capacity part numbers versus subcapacity part numbers on a one-for-one basis, right? So the price per PVU is the same. We're simply migrating to full capacity, not taking any rights away, simply trying to make it easier administratively and telling customers, you know, we're going to migrate these parts for SNS entitlements at your next renewal, you know, beginning on or after July 1st, and you can use these full capacity part numbers just like you used to use your subcapacity part numbers. For the license entitlements, we are not going to, you know, go back and reissue proof of entitlements for the licenses. We're simply telling customers that you can use those subcapacity license entitlements for subcapacity or full capacity. If you're using them for full capacity, it's one for one.
Okay, that makes sense. That way there won't be a mix of full cap and subcap part numbers on the renewals.
Right.
Thank you.
And we'll go to our next question.
Hi, this is Ken Rigby. My question was answered earlier. If you could please send out the letter that to the CSSRs that the customers are receiving, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
So the letter, you know, we did send out a PA flash, right, explaining, as well as, you know, a letter that sales execs, asking them to cascade to CSSRs and other reps, mentioning that, you know, the letter is, you know, accessible from the subcapacity webpage, right? So if you go to, in this presentation, page 18, the second link, subcapacity licensing external website portal, if you go there on the right-hand nav bar, you'll see a link for the subcapacity attachment. If you go to that link under the subcapacity attachment, again on the right-hand nav bar, you'll see a link to the letter itself, right, in the 28 different languages that we conduct PA business. And you can, you know, pull it down from there.
Great. Thank you.
Beth.
We'll go to our next question.
Carlos and team, hi. This is Mark Stamper. Just a wonderful job. And, Carlos, because we're all in this together and this is not a plant, please keep doing this. And thanks so much for the historical context, because we have reps coming in from acquisitions and we have people that maybe still haven't gotten totally up to speed. So really good job positioning that, and please keep doing it. And I think maybe it's either we've heard it so much or this new Intel announcement, I think it shows we positioned ourselves quite well with subcapacity for sure, with performance, but with PVUs for the simplicity and granularity. And so it also now shows the price performance, which is the real value of everything we're doing, not just with our product technology, but with the metrics. So if that's the case and we keep marching in that direction, has there been any thought to pull all our licensing under PVUs?
Well, we already have more than half of the revenue driven from distributed products on PVUs. Some products it's more intuitive to license them on per user or other licensing models. So, you know, certainly we agree, you know, PVUs is certainly a reasonably simple structure for licensing. Per user is also very simple and intuitive, and we look to those as our primary price metrics. But in some cases, other metrics are better.
Okay.
So, you know, that's the high-level strategy.
Okay.
So thanks for that, Mark. I just want to make one more clarification from Bill Boone's question earlier. I mentioned that, you know, we have a subcap ID. If you have special bids, I just want to mention that, you know, the resources that we have available, it's web-based, right, information. You go to the internal Excel page, subcapacity licensing page. There's a lot of good information in there. At the very bottom of that page, there is a link that shows you that subcap ID. But there's a lot of good information in there for you guys to familiarize yourself with. Sorry. Next question.
We'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Vanessa. I wanted to ask whether the license metric tool is the same as Tivoli License Compliance Manager, and will the tool be free to customers?
Yeah, so the Tivoli License Compliance Manager no-charge product has been replaced by the IBM License Metric tool, which is also no-charge. So ITLCM, no longer the no-charge product no longer available. The commercial ITLCM or ILM product is still in the marketplace, but the no-charge version has been replaced by ILMT.
And if your customer has that no-charge version, they're not getting access to the new virtualization technology that support gets put into ILMT. So you need to migrate them over.
Right. Yeah, and as an extension of the question, I've often found customers who want to utilize this for non-IBM software as well. Is that something that would be on Anvil?
That's one of the functionalities that differentiates the chargeable or commercial version of the licensing tool from the no-charge version, right? The no-charge version is for PVU products only. The commercial version, you know, will be available for other products as well. Or is available for other products as well. Now, let me just take your question and sort of point out this is one of the key things that we changed with the new attachment, right? So the new attachment now talks about the IBM License Metric tool, while the old attachment talked about, you know, the Tivoli License Compliance Manager tool. And some of the requirements around the old tool were really heavier-handed, right? So the old tool required that customers send reports to IBM. The new tool requires that customers run the reports and maintain them, you know, in the event of an audit, right? So that's one of the, you know, things that we changed in the subcap terms.
Okay. And this is Steve Salivari. I also want to clarify that if the customer has the IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager version 2.3, if they have applied Fix Pack 5 that came out late last year, then that product is also an acceptable substitute for the IBM License Metric tool. They don't have to install both. I mean, the IBM Tivoli License Compliance Manager with Fix Pack 5 satisfies the ILMT requirement.
Great. Thank you.
And we'll move to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
My question was answered for an earlier caller.
Thank you. And we'll move to our next question. Mark, please go ahead.
No, I couldn't quite catch earlier. Thank you for the information, but exactly which link on the pull down on the right hand side gets me to the customer facing letter. I definitely need that now.
Okay. So if you're on either the internal or external subcapacity page, in both cases, if you go under Essentials on the right-hand nav bar and click on the link that says Subcapacity Licensing Attachments, see that one there? Then you scroll down to, I stand corrected, it's not yet on the right-hand nav bar under Subcapacity Attachments page. It will be soon. But at the moment, it's the second link under the first paragraph on that page. It says April 2009 customer notification letters. See that there?
All right. Run which page am I on again one more time? So Subcapacity Resources for IBM Sellers or?
That's fine.
I know there's no link off that page.
There is. Go to the third link. It says Subcapacity Licensing Attachments. See that?
To this page, and there's no link on this page. He's
already
in. Got it. I got it.
Okay, and then under the subcapacity attachment page.
Very good. I got it. Thank you.
There's a second link there, customer notification letter.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
And as a reminder, that is star one on your touch-tone telephone. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2 on your touch-tone telephone. We'll now go to our next question.
Hi, this is Tim Ward. I have a question, actually, on the subcapacity announcement enhancement page. I think it was page 11. It talked about expanding the eligible virtualization technology. So it's actually a twofold question. One, does ILMT execute or run on Linux and System Z? That's one question. And two, in the past, the subcapacity capabilities from a pricing standpoint, if you were using virtualization technologies on distributed platforms, you were able to get down to a partial core, aggregate those together, and come up with whatever the core amount was that you would be charging against PVUs. That did not exist in Linux and System Z. But I noticed in the expansion of eligible virtualization technologies, you offer operating system commands. Certainly, hard limits can be set in VM. Are they included on Linux for System Z down to that level of granularity now?
Not for System Z. The operating system commands are limited to x86 technology. Back to your first question, though, the answer was yes. We do have subcapacity licensing available for ZIFLs, and ILMT, you know, does run on those environments. So I think you had another question in there as well about fractional cores. So let me just one more time. ILMT, you know, and subcapacity licensing is available for ZIFLs. The operating system commands not available for ZIFLs. Fractional cores, you're correct, not available for Z. Only available really for IBM Power systems running Power VM. The fractional core aggregate and round rules. Not available for any other virtualization technology. Now, some of you with this question, you know, which sounded a little complicated when we get into fractional cores, let me just, you know, say that we do have the rules around, you know, what's eligible, what's not eligible when you get into some of the fancier virtualization technologies available from this same website. You should find a link that says license counting rules.
Thank you.
Yep.
We'll go to our next question. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Cristian. I am from Mexico. I've came upon a customer that didn't want the the PBUs to be used, because they said that they didn't know when they may change, the metrics may change. How can we defend this? How can we support this initiative with our customers?
I think really it starts with a conversation around licensing in general, right, and the value that we're looking to measure, and, you know, different options that we have available. And when we look at all the different options, the simplest one with the fairest price for value is the PVU structure, right? So, you know, there are other models. I would, you know, explain to the customer that the other models are many times more complex and don't, you know, measure the value as fairly as PVUs. So counting the number of cores and then identifying, you know, the PVUs required per core, you know, really is the most logical pricing metric available. So it's that kind of education discussion you really need to have with your customer. And if you need help with that, you know, reaching out to, you know, folks that, you know, support you for, you know, those kinds of questions is the right thing to do.
This is Roger again. The other thing I'll mention is we have started putting up some additional sets of charts with embedded audio to help you with these kinds of questions. The one that specifically addresses your question will go up by the end of this week. It is not up as of this moment. So certainly if you check back in a day or two on the PBU internal website, there'll be some more help for you in answering specifically that kind of question.
Thanks, Roger. So, you know, so there is help out there on the web pages that, you know, are identified, the first two pages, the first two links on the last two pages of this deck. There's a bunch of education chart decks, and Roger's referring specifically to voice, you know, with voice available that you can share with your customers.
Okay, thank you.
We'll go to our next question.
Hello, this is Keith Whitehead. A quick question here. Actually, not terribly quick. It's a little bit complicated, and it may be one that's better taken offline. But in terms of the letters going out, and this has always been kind of a question of mine in terms of how this works with existing ELA customers, for example, clients who have very special terms who may have gotten discounting or substitution or other things based upon full deployment, in other words, not using subcapacity. I think most of these types of letters get intercepted by ELA coordinators, but there's a risk here in saying to these customers that kind of got special licensing terms based on full capacity or pricing or whatever to say, well, now we're converting everything to subcap. I think that could create a lot of confusion for some customers. So I don't know all the filtering processes that are going to keep that from happening, but I guess the general tone of my question is, you know, are there kind of exceptions to the fact that we're going to basically say everybody and anybody is entitled to subcap no matter how and when they acquired their licenses?
Well, I mean, if there's a contract in place, you know, then it's a different story, right? And, you know, we're expecting that, you know, the CSSRs and deal makers who, you know, who are responsible for maintaining those customer relationships are going to have the conversation with the customer that's going to receive these letters, right?
Yeah, just realize that taking that subcapacity part number away, though, for renewals can create some confusion there, because some of these customers have maybe since started buying or acquiring some licenses under subcap, maybe at a different discount level or without some of the other terms of flexibility. So now if everything has one part number, it does actually make it a little bit trickier for them to say, okay, these I can use subcapacity on, but these I can't because they're all the same part number. So, I mean, I think it's generally a good thing for most customers, but, you know, eliminating the subcap renewal number can actually cause some challenges.
Yeah, I mean, so you're right. I mean, I think that there are going to be some challenges, but the flip side, you know, there's many more challenges on the flip side, frankly.
Yep. Okay. Fair enough.
Yep. So, yeah. So we're going to have to, our reps are going to have to, you know, understand this announcement and take that into consideration when they have discussions with their customers. Yep.
go to our next question.
Hi, my name is Carrie Morgan. I'm curious how the mechanisms work here regarding the client agreeing to the subcapacity T's and C's. Let's say they agreed to them prior to July 2008, and then we're going back and changing that agreement structure based upon what we deem to be, new T's and C's. And since that agreement includes things like required audit times and things like that, how do we position with the client that, whenever they get this letter, that things can change in this agreement?
Well, I mean, the first point to understand is that in the Passport Advantage agreement, we reserve the right to make changes to terms with 90 days notice, right? So, that's the first point to understand that we, have this right per the Passport Advantage agreement. The second point I think to understand is that, the reason that, frankly, we had to change the terms is that the technology has changed. As I mentioned, not only did we add more virtualization technologies to the offering with sometimes unique virtualization counting rules that were never mentioned in the first attachment, but we also changed, from the previous license compliance manager tool that customers hated, right, to a much easier to use ILMT tool. I think I would start out with the Passport Advantage, agreement. We're providing the 90 days notice, and the changes are really generally favorable to the customer. So,
thank you.
Yep.
And we'll take our next question.
My question was answered. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to our next question.
Hi, this is Carl Meyer again. If a customer is not considering subcapacity, can they still use the ILMT tool for inventorying their PVU licenses?
Absolutely, Carl. Good question. So the positioning is that the ILMT tool is required for subcapacity licensing. I mean, there are a handful of exceptions to that requirement. Mainly, it's for customers with less than 1,000 employees and contractors, so long as those customers are not a service provider, right? So the positioning is that ILMT is required for subcapacity licensing and is recommended for full capacity licensing to help customers, get into a better compliance posture. Absolutely. And it's no charge for the ILMT product.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
And we'll go to our next question.
Yeah, hi, this is Rick Holland. This actually aligns with the last question that was asked, specifically with regards, I believe it was Roger who said ITLCM version 2.3 Fix Pack 5 satisfied the ILMT requirement. What I wanted to determine was whether or not ILMT would measure non-PVU-based licensing, or would we need to have an implementation which requires that previous product, the ITLCM version 2.3 with this Fixed Pack 5 to measure both subcapacity and non-subcapacity licensing.
Right. So, Steve, maybe you could help me here, but let me start out by saying the no-charge ILMT product measures PVU licensing. That's what it's intended to measure, both subcapacity and full capacity. While the commercial product currently, IBM License Compliance Manager, or TLCM, typically License Compliance Manager, that product, continues, to add more functionality. I'm not exactly sure where we are. Steve, can you comment on whether that product measures other products in the IBM distributed portfolio that are non-PVU-based?
Yes, ITLCM has been able to manage all of IBM software for the most part, I'm talking about non-mainframe, distributed software, including software that runs on Linux on a ZIFL. It has been able to do that for some time now, and it also can manage non-IBM software. It has the catalog already has a lot of non-IBM software in the catalog, and if a customer has something that is not in there, then the Tivoli team will work with them to get that product added. So it will also monitor another type of non-IBM software. It's a constantly growing catalog.
Yeah. Okay. And just one other clarification, you were talking to the Power Over VPN, and I was asking specifically for distributed licensing. You were talking to Power VM distributed fractional core licensing. I was just going to point out that occurs when you have capped LPARs for your vCPU, not uncapped LPARs, right? That denotes back to standard PVU-based licensing, not fractional core.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
And there are no further questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, I just want to thank everyone for their participation and lots of good questions. This session has been recorded and will be posted to the internal subcapacity licensing webpage under Seller Resources, and we'll continue to have these calls as we make changes to the offering. Thanks very much, everyone.
This concludes today's presentation. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day.